Hello. Well, well, well. Welcome back, you guys, to another edition of Pop Apologists. This episode is a little bit different. Lauren is finding herself on the open seas. She's currently on a boat somewhere off Greece, I think. I'm not sure. I should have asked more questions before she set off, but I didn't, and I'm a bad sister. I think I sent her an I love you text. I'm not sure. But anyways, today is a very special day because I'm hosting and I'm joined by my dear friend. Truly, we met a mere, month ago, but it feels like it's been a lifetime. Joe Peacock, welcome to the podcast.
I'm so tickled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, you are truly one of the funniest people I've ever met. And I thought I'd met a lot of funny people in my life. You know, people say, oh, this is my, Ben set us up, really. Ben is our mutual friend. And he said, you have to meet my friend Joe. He's hilarious. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure he's funny. You know, people are funny. No, not true. Joe, you are absolutely hilarious. Definitely funnier than me, which is something I don't say very often, but I will say that in full confidence. So I'm very excited for you to be on the pod today.
Lols. Well, okay. Well, you mentioned humor, and that's funny because we met on a trip to Nantucket, and my friend is Ben, and he said you were coming, so I stalked you on Instagram before, and humor is not something I imagined you possessing, and I don't know. This has been a very boring summer for me, so I think I wanted a little bit of drama. You know, I'm going on a week-long trip, and I just like, I expected us to not clash, but me to just be annoyed and bugged by you during the week, and just kind of like be able to come back home and tell my friends, like, oh, I was on Nantucket, and this girl would just not stop doing X. I don't know what you're going to do that was going to annoy me, but I thought you would. And we got on the bus and just started chatting. I was like, you're amazing. You're so funny.
I love that you were fully prepared to come into that trip hating me. I appreciate that energy. And honestly, I was prepared to hate you as well. Not really, not hate, but I didn't know what to think of these friends, and I felt like I was going to be a fish out of water. And then I just fell absolutely in love with all of them, especially you. And I said to Ben like multiple times throughout the trip, I was like, I just love Joe. So, it's really crazy how our stars collided and we turned out to be the best of friends instead of mortal enemies.
So true. So thankful. And yeah, crazy. It's only been 3 weeks.
Did you have any other hijinks or pranks planned to do to me on Nantucket? You told me about one, but yeah, I'm just curious if you had any others.
The one, which is wild because I'm a huge Parent Trap fan. So you would think that I would be doing, but I'm too lazy to pull off any of the pranks that Lindsay Lohan and her twin pulled off.
Oh, and honestly, like knowing that house, like if you had poured maple syrup on those floors to try and make me take a tumble, like it would not have ended well. That Airbnb host would not have taken it.
The house would have come crashing down. I'm sure it was pre-war. Who knows what would have happened.
No, I think we thought it was pre-war, but when we got there, we were like, when was this house built? Like 1870 or 1780 maybe?
Right. And then it was like 1982. Literally. I was like, okay, pre-Gulf War.
This is a log cabin. Pre-Gulf War. Yeah, right. That's the war you're referring to.
Okay, that's right.
Okay, so the reason why Joe is on the podcast today is, and the reason why we fell in love on Nantucket was because he knows all things there is to know about pop culture. And we just immediately, we're in sync about caring about the most important things in life, which, is Taylor Swift, celebrity gossip, Taylor Swift, So today's episode, we're going to actually do a full Taylor Swift deep dive discography. I think that true Swifties can never get enough of her, and she really is evergreen. Like, I know that her next batch of songs is set to come out maybe next month or the month after.
Yes, her re-recording of Red, November 19th, stream and support.
So we've got some time on anywhere you find your music. Yeah. But Taylor Swift content is evergreen, so we're going to do a full discography deep dive, like I said, and we're going to go through every album that she has, talk about our favorites, talk about the songs we could leave behind, and just all things Taylor. So should we get into it?
Let's get into it. Yeah.
Joe, can we talk about what we did to prepare really quickly for this episode?
Definitely. Well, I think we went through each album and each we album. Said, okay, which songs could we not live without, and which songs are we I don't know, dare I say it, embarrassed for her, or think we can remove right. from history?
I would love to have some erasure. Can I use that phrase here?
I think it's fine because I think we both love Taylor Swift, but we don't love her mm-hmm. so much that we're blind to her mistakes. Because one of the things to love about her right. is that she is an embarrassing human in a great way. Is. That's what makes her relatable.
In a great way. She's like not perfect and not even like, how do I say this? She's not someone who I always want to emulate. Like, I don't think she's a cool girl. And no. like, I think Dua Lipa, cool girl. I would love to have her cool, edgy energy. Taylor Swift does not have that. She has a little bit more cringe to yes. her, which I kind of love her for.
Some of my favorite Taylor moments are cringe moments, like the hat she definitely. Wore in the Folklore Long Pond sessions.
Like okay, so let's talk about that. Because I texted you today and I said, okay, I have to like move out of this apartment that I've been subletting. I'm just going to, you know, hunker down. I'm going to watch Miss Americana and I'm going to watch the Long Pond sessions yes. to just prepare and really, you know, get in the mood. The outfits and Lauren and I actually talked about Long Pond a little bit, but I think we could all use a refresher about just how bad the outfits are, all of them in Long Pond. I don't get it.
I think it was filmed at the height of COVID. So she's not doing her own wardrobe because Stella McCartney still dresses her. Yeah, she has a whole team that's working remote. But
Runway is still like working and going.
I've certainly got all my packages.
Right.
Well, and then the whole hair aesthetic. She's had some interesting eras fashion-wise. Yeah.
When watching Miss Americana, they flash back to her hair during Reputation Tour. Mm-hmm. And when it was the ash blonde bob.
Oh, right. Like that was so right before, bad. In between 89 and Reputation. That's when she met Joe Alwyn, famously mm-hmm. at the Met Gala. Yeah.
Right. And honestly, that's how you know their love is real, because she was truly at one of her worst looks.
As was he. And, he had a buzz cut.
That's true.
Which
you're
only
right,
Brad
you're right.
Pitt and Mr. and Mrs. Smith looks good in a buzz
cut.
Oh,
my
gosh. And I have a buzz cut right now.
And you can honestly pull it off. You and Brad Pitt, the only men I know. Can
You're
pull
kind,
off a buzz cut.
But no, it's yeah. I mean, mine was logistically, I had to for reasons.
Did you do it for your race?
yeah, so I could run faster. No, I dyed my hair blonde.
This is how
right
little I know about running.
Oh, I dyed my hair blonde right before I met you, and it was fun for like two weeks. But I was like, I had nothing to wear. I bought all my hair that matches my normal color. So. I had them buzz it, but they had to buzz it to a really short length to get it back to its normal color.
Well, you know, we've all been there, Brittany. You know, are you sure you're gonna have to do a drug test?
Oh my gosh! Oh,
sorry, that's actually feels like kind of a dark joke nowadays. I'm gonna take that back. I'm sorry
to
Brittany Stans.
This podcast?
I do edit. I'm not gonna edit that out because I'm gonna, you know, be really transparent about the mistakes I made. Okay, but that was a dark joke, and so I'm sorry.
We own our mistakes.
Can we go on a little Britney tangent just because this is just two friends hanging out? I was recently thinking about the song Lucky, okay? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And listening to the song Lucky through a 2021 Britney lens is actually so sad.
True. I recently played it on a road trip out here and I'm trying to remember what's super sad.
I mean,
about
it's she's talking about like how. She's talking about how she's so lucky she's a star, but she cries in her lonely heart.
Oh my gosh, you're so right.
And it's like, if there's nothing missing in my life, why do these tears come at night? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, she's a I mean, that song was a cry for help back then. And we thought it was just, you know, oh, boo-hoo, you're a celebrity, you're really rich, you know, but you're sad. No, it was literally, I mean, I don't know if she was under the conservatorship. I don't think she was when she wrote that song. It was like, you know, early Britney days,
right.
But still.
Yeah, she was.
It was foreshadowing. It was waving a flag and we all missed it. So that's on us.
That song is
anyways.
Underrated. I will say that. And I hope that song still brings her warmth because it was probably a song when she was presumably had more power. But yes, mm-hmm. it definitely mm-hmm. foreshadowed something really sad. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, anyways, we're here to talk about Taylor. So let's get into it. I guess, actually, Joe, I did tell you that I wanted the audience to kind of warm up to you and to get to know you. So before we talk about Taylor, everybody, I want Joe to sort of tell you about some of his top pop culture moments from, you know, his adolescence, his upbringing, his sexual awakening, like whatever it may be. just so that you can get to know the Joe that I love. Okay, so okay. Joe.
Well, and that was a perfect segue because pop culture is something that's very important to me, and I feel like the first milestone of that was Britney Spears. You know, we didn't have a ton of money growing up, and one day my sister came home from Walmart with my grandma with the Baby One More Time album, and I had two questions. One was, what is Walmart? And two, who is this? I had never been to Walmart. So this idea that you could like go and like go to a grocery store that also had this giant entertainment section
with
rollback prices. Right. And
rollback prices.
The smiley face. Like I loved going to Walmart after that. But pop culture wise, yeah, Britney Spears was everything in a way. Not that I was, I don't know. It was mainly as a child and just hearing Baby One More Time and You Drive Me Crazy. Like she just seemed so powerful and the pop music was just like indelible. I loved it. And
it was so good.
It was so good. And we used to like mark our calendars like, okay, I think it was something like August 8th is the Teen Choice Awards and that's on Fox. So we get that channel unlike the VMAs. And so we would watch it and record it. And that's the award show that Teen People used to put on Fox Network, right. And they would hand out surfboards. And anyway, she was slated to perform and she came out. Well, she didn't come out. The stage went dark. And there's obviously a ton of backup dancers, a fog machine, and a male announcer saying, like, Britney, are you ready for your mission? 3, 2, 1. And she comes out and she has cut her hair shoulder length.
Oh my gosh.
The rest of America may have already known that. As an 8-year-old, this was news to me. And just seeing her move on presumably live television with the new haircut, it made her seem so much more real than all these like polished music videos I'd seen hadn't. And I was like, oh, I was upset. I was like, wow, stars really are just like us. Like I also just got my haircut.
I also just went to the local Walmart, got my haircut, checked out those rollback prices. That's Joe. That's a watershed moment. That's a huge moment where you see the, you know, this person you idolize up on screen and moving and dancing. And like, also I think there's something really interesting about seeing celebrities at award shows where it's like feels live, where it's not like this, it is manicured in some ways, but it's also like, this is happening in real time. We'll get back to this like notion I'm talking about when we talk about Taylor Swift and Kanye West at the VMAs, because you know, you see them having normal human reactions or whatever, and it's fascinating. Okay, Joe, tell me about another moment. You already gave me a little bit of a sneak peek, so I'm kind of dying for the I'm the worst. I thought you put on the outline the kiss, the Rachel McAdams, Ryan Gosling kiss on here.
No, but to that end, with award shows, like that is an iconic video of Rachel McAdams and Ryan Gosling. They're both nominated for The Notebook, and they're nominated for Best Movie Kiss. And at this point, they're now dating. And this is the summer The Notebook came out. And I go back and watch this YouTube video when I feel just a little bit down.
Right.
And they win they win for Best Kiss. And on stage, before accepting it, they like kind of are like flirtatious with each other, looking at each other and like, should we do this? And they're like, yeah, let's do this. Rachel McAdams backs up. And then does a full run to Ryan Gosling. He picks her up and they make it. I think they basically like do that in Crazy Stupid Love too. But
literally, it's the perfect run and jump. I feel like we see a lot of on-screen kisses nowadays. You know, I'm pretty much desensitized completely. I watch Love Island. I see a lot of butt and boob. But there's something about that kiss and the burning passion that you can see as they approach the stage, as they make eye contact, that honestly like does something for me that a lot of other on-screen kisses don't do, frankly.
I completely agree. It's thrilling because I feel like in like the 40s or something, the kiss was like the ultimate part in a movie. And now like it's nothing, but that kiss is still everything.
Right. At the risk of sounding like my parents, we've really cheapened the kiss, you know, in a lot of our films.
Well, in that video, you see the reaction of Hillary and Hayley Duff. They're looking at each other like, what? And then Lindsay Lohan's like, what? And it's just everyone, I think, wishes they were the other person up there, like having that kind of relationship.
You mentioned Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but I don't think like there's been another on-screen romantic relationship that's done as much as The Notebook has done in a really long time. Like,
I completely agree.
Brad and Angelina, and then I think them too, and maybe a few others.
Yeah.
Maybe.
No, definitely.
So good.
It's so good. Oh my gosh.
Okay, give me another pop culture moment, a watershed moment.
One was Reese Witherspoon, who couldn't love her more. And this was after mm-hmm. she had certified her spot on the A-lister with on the A-list with Legally Blonde. She had done Sweet Home Alabama, right. Won the Oscar for Walk the Line. So our family could not love her more. And then we find out mm-hmm. that her and Ryan Phillippe have split up. And that, I mean, I had just seen her on The View talk about how she was raising her kids with Ryan Phillippe. And I was probably 12 or 13. And so yeah. I was already obsessed with watching Reese Witherspoon movies. But now you're just are kind of start to think and open up to this part of her life that you don't see, but you are hearing about. And it's kind of in a gross way. You just want to hear more and you're concerned totally. For her. And I don't know. That whole breakup really did a number on me. I mean, we had a desktop computer and you know, those mm-hmm. screensavers, you could write happy birthday, mom, or whatnot.
Yes. Yes.
I wrote if Reese and Ryan can't make it, no one can. And it was, our house was in mourning, which is funny because now I'm very, oh yeah, go ahead.
No, no, you go.
Oh, I mean, now I couldn't be happier. I think she really dodged a bullet. I'm still wildly obsessed with them. What keeps me up at night is when Deacon is obviously with Ryan for the weekend because they're posting on Instagram mm-hmm. That they went to Detroit or the right. Outer Banks. And I'm probably Reese, I'm oh, Lord, get him home because this man is not taking care of him.
Absolutely. He's Disneyland dad. Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot about Ryan Phillippe other than that he's really hot. He's mega hot. But do we know – did he cheat on her?
Okay, yes, he cheated on her. I mean, I don't, I wasn't there, but yeah, sure. He cheated on her with his stop loss.
This whole podcast is speculation. That's a caveat that just stands.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't want to have to lawyer up, but yes, he was shooting a movie called Stop Loss circa 2006, and he cheated on her with his co-star Abbie Cornish. They dated for a year or two after, but no longer are together. Yeah, and good luck working in Hollywood now with, Reese Witherspoon running it.
Honestly,
one thing we do know,
getting a line Draper James anywhere, okay?
yeah sorry, you're probably not going to be on Big Little Lies season 3. But Chan, one thing we do know about Ryan Phillippe, and this is really peculiar, is Ryan and Reese are both on Instagram, as are their two beautiful lookalike children, Ava and mm-hmm. Deacon, and the whole family, including the ex-husband, follow Reese Witherspoon, and
okay.
So everyone's following Ryan. Who's following Ryan back? None of them. Which I find bonkers.
So Ryan Phillippe follows Reese, follows everybody, but none of the kids or anyone follows Ryan Phillippe.
This was true as of 2 months ago, and I'm just gonna make sure that's still true. But yeah, I want to know why this is the case. And I love
amazing.
I can see why Ava, the daughter, wouldn't want to follow him, because he the first photo I see right now is a fucking thirst trap. He's literally sweating in his swim trunks, and it's kind of it's an odd crotch shot too. He's covered in swim trunks, but it's bizarre, and the caption is .. just two dots. I forgot what I was gonna say. So as a daughter, I probably wouldn't want to follow that.
Oh my gosh, no, I'm literally looking at this right now. Ugh. He's the problem is he's a really, really hot guy. So I don't blame Reese for falling in love with him.
No.
And everything, but he's the type of guy where you actually, maybe you start to get to know him or build a life with him, and you're oh, this guy is not all he's cracked up to be, but he's really hot. I mean, and he's still a really attractive guy, but wow.
100%. And by the way, I just confirmed that they're not following him.
This,
oh yeah,
that's
well, I mean, okay, if my dad was posting that, I'd be real nice,
right?
No, just kidding.
What?
What?
I'm just looking at all these mirror selfies. If my dad's Instagram, and I'm a teen, okay, at this point, I mean, they're full blown teens. If my dad is nothing but selfies, mm-hmm. Gross.
I know, and shirtless ones. Not to slut shame him.
Sure.
But yeah, there's also an amazing shot of, yeah, it's weird.
We're on this podcast, we're a fan of men who have really restrained Instagrams, or at least straight men. So we like a straight man with a restrained Instagram. We like, I don't know if you're familiar with Brad Falchuk.
Yes.
Yes. So Brad Falchuk is kind of like the pinnacle of a straight white man. On this podcast, he's really restrained on Instagram. And he, if he posts, he'll post something that's, you know, just kind of like normal, or he'll post a really lovely photo of Gwyneth Paltrow that feels very effortless and natural. And then he'll write a really lovely caption. I actually yesterday told Ben that he could post any photo he'd like of me, and he's welcome to just copy paste a Brad Falchuk caption, switch out the names, and it's totally fine and it's all good, and I would love it more than anything.
Okay, so I'm on Brad's page now, and I completely agree with you. It's so restrained in a lovely way, but let's see if that theory holds up. I'm just gonna pick up a random photo.
We'll see if we can find a great photo of Gwyneth. Yeah.
So he's with someone, I think he's with Jessica Seinfeld about one of her cookbooks, probably. Okay. So could Ben post this about you? The caption is, "This amazing woman is saving the world one dad at a time."
Well, no, because it's not. It's got to be a caption about Gwyneth Paltrow. I'm not interested in a caption about any other like second-rate woman.
Okay, I found a Gwyneth one. From my, quote, "My Girl Getting Ready" series. Hashtag legs for days. Wow, he really could. This is amazing.
That's amazing, right?
And you know, Chan, the great, but it's sexy. Yeah. Mm-hmm, it's like, tell me you support women without telling me you support women. That's Brad's.
Yes. Point. Tell me you believe women without telling me you believe women.
Well, and the great thing is, like, Brad Falchuk has an amazing body. I don't know that from his Instagram. I know it from People Magazine. And that's the way it should be. Yeah. Like, leave something to the imagination, as my grandma used to say about our prom dresses.
Right. don't cheapen your body with a selfie, okay?
Yeah. Spoiler.
So, okay, speaking of men showing restraint, I think it's time now to pivot back to Taylor Swift.
Okay.
And Joe Alwyn, who I'm getting at, and their extremely private relationship that, you know, is nodded to in her, like, most recent three albums. So, or I guess four?
Okay. I know we're going to have a lot of Taylor Swift fans. So, do you say it's not alluded to in the previous albums?
No, it is. It is. Reputation, yes. Right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
Okay. But before we get to Joe, before we get to her prize, she had to go through a lot of she had to kiss a lot of frogs.
Frogs. Yeah. And I think she had a dream of kissing a lot of frogs, which I think is what her 2006 self-titled album is about. Like, I don't think a lot of these were real experiences. Some of them were, but like Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of these feel like daydreams of a girl who's in Algebra 1A. In the best way. And that's why I really related to it, because I took Algebra 1A and then Algebra 1B. So I had to take Algebra over 2 years.
I would say, daydreams of a girl
for me to grasp.
In Algebra 1 who, like, also has signed a writing deal with, like, Nashville RCA. And, like, has to put out a few tracks. Right. Yeah, yeah.
They're like, hey, we're going to need those 16 tracks. Don't give a shit about your homework.
But, Chan, you bring up a great question. Like, I would love to see Taylor Swift take a math test. And that, I'm just curious. Yeah.
Let's make this girl take the ACT. Let's see how she does. I bet she doesn't do better than me.
Which, by the way, I got a 24 on the ACT. So, like, I bet she could score higher.
Oh, my gosh, Joe. That is truly shocking to me, because you're very, very smart. I got the same score twice. I got a 27 twice, everybody. This is me being hashtag radically honest.
Can you edit that score out? Just kidding.
Actually bleep that. Joe's like, actually, you're not gonna want to share that, like, for future posterity.
please bleep my score when the podcast is on. I got a
I honestly, my parents also made me pay for my ACT prep course with my Christmas money.
Oh my god. Which is
some real hard knock bullshit. Sorry, bullshiz. My parents are cracking down about me cussing on this podcast. And then when I got the same score, like, it was devastating. It's like, honestly, one of the biggest losses to date for me.
Oh, sorry. So you took the ACT test and then you took a course and then got the same score?
Yes. And then I got the same score.
Yeah. And that was with your Christmas money. Oh, okay.
That was with my Christmas money. Yeah. Okay. It's like, that should just have been a part of the braces package, you know, like, you parents, you pay for certain things for your kids so that they can be successful. And apparently, you know, I was like Annie and I couldn't pay for mine, but I had to pay for mine. Anyways. Okay. Back to Taylor Swift and a true, you know, bootstrap tale of a girl who grew up in Pennsylvania with a stockbroker stockbroking. Stockbroker? Stockbroker father.
Oh, yeah. I think her dad was a stockbroker. Yeah. Yeah. And right. I yeah. So yeah.
She didn't exactly grow up in, you know, Podunk, Tennessee. I don't know if I can say Podunk, but she didn't grow up in any backcountry, I don't believe.
No, she grew up in Pennsylvania on a Christmas tree farm that we hear about later in the single Christmas Tree Farm.
Yeah.
And in this album, you know, she's been in Nashville for, I think, like 2 years, but you would think that she had been there for like her whole life based on the accent she used. Right. It's not only on the recording, but in award shows and what. She's just like, so y'all, I can't believe it.
Do you think she picked that up and then just kind of like ran with it?
You know, I think she moved there so late in life that it's not like, I just started talking like this. But I think it was learned. Because for country, to be on country radio, like some, it's become so poppy that I feel like often the only signifier between pop and country music is the accent and also the storytelling, which she completely nails. But I think she needed the accent. Yeah. And apparently from the album cover, the hair too.
Oh, the hair. Okay, let's talk about the album cover. This is Taylor Swift, you know, self-titled album. The hair is really quite curled.
It's really quite curled. And the whole aesthetic of the album, I know it was years ago, but still, it just feels like they didn't have a ton of money. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah.
They paid a graphic designer for 45 minutes of their time. And said, here's a photo. It's a little bit blurry. And just do your best. She likes butterflies.
It's so true. And they're using like an American Tourist Lost in Hawaii font. Like,
yes,
it's kind of like it was like lightly tatted on, like some henna inspired the font. Yeah, and also, what's so sad is it doesn't really look like Taylor Swift. And I get she's like 16 here, but I think they're trying to make her look like a beauty queen, and maybe that's what she was going for, which is good for her,
right? Yeah, it was definitely a different look for her. But you know, despite her album cover being low grade, the songs knock it out of the park. This is one of my favorite albums by her. And I didn't realize how many of my truly favorite old Taylor songs are off this album versus Fearless until I did this listening back, you know, research moment. So do you want to start with the songs that you love?
Okay, sure.
Or we can kind of go back and forth, whatever.
I would say that like the two songs I love, or it's really just really one song I absolutely love from this album is Our Song. And it was the first song I heard from Taylor on the radio. And it's such a classic, like, stories. It's so good. It's actually my ringtone now.
It is. Yeah. It is such a good song. It's perfect adolescent storytelling, which is something that a theme we will be returning back to. She nails teenage love better than anyone. And I will hang my hat on that till the day I croak over and die. Keel over and croak. Our Song is so good. The lyrics are juvenile but perfect, and I love it for that.
It's such a cute idea too, the idea that like they don't have a song and he's like, yes we do. Our song is all these like things that make up our relationship, like me, the sound of my feet, you know, sneaking in, etc. I don't know if she really writes that.
Lyric I don't really get is like, our song is a slamming screen door, sinking out late, tapping on your window when we're on the phone and you talk real slow because it's late and your mom, I don't know. Do you talk slow because it's like quieter? Or did she say low and you talk real low? But it feels like she's saying, and you talk real slow.
I think she says, and you talk real slow. I think, let's see, where is it? I'm trying to find it on here. No, that is bonkers. And the way she says it too, and you talk real slow. No, I don't either. And that's weird. Does she say that?
She says, yeah. And he talks real slow because it's late and his mom, I don't know.
No, if anything, if I was trying to have a conversation with someone and my mom did not know, I feel like I would talk fast. Because I needed to get it out. Yeah.
You get it out and then you close your trap. Anyways, that's my one qualm with those lyrics. But other than that, really good. Okay. My favorite off this album is the song Tim McGraw. I love this song. It's for many reasons. I think the first is that it's a beautiful song about a beautiful man that I love. Tim McGraw is someone Lauren and I really adore. And it's meta in the sense that it's like, it's our favorite. It's one of our favorite singers singing about our favorite man. And it's really lovely. I also remember watching this music video as an adolescent and feeling very, very attracted to the teen talent featured.
Hashtag respect.
That makes me sound creepy.
Not at all. Teen talent. I don't think I've ever seen the music video, so I'm very curious what he looks like. But
it's good. He looks like let's see. Let me see. Maybe Google. Let's see.
But Chan, this song is so good, and I think you're so right. I love when music references pop culture or other songs.
Yes.
And I think it was so smart of her to do this for her first song because she name checks, you know, the biggest country star at that time. Tim McGraw. And so I think everyone was like, who is this girl?
Right. It's so good.
And also the lyrics where she, the main part of that song is, she sings, he said the way my blue eyes shined, put those Georgia stars to shame that night. I said, that's a lie. But I just like, could you imagine? I mean, could you imagine Ben telling you like, Jen, you're beautiful. The way you put those Georgia stars to bed, and you're like, that's a lie. Like, it just sounds so accusatory.
I've never, like, looked at that lyric before. I said, that's a lie.
It's, like, such a mood killer, frankly.
It honestly kills the whole vibe of the song. Like, oh, yeah, and it's only there at the end. It's just at the very end, she, like, it's like, I actually hate you.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I said, that's a lie. Well, wow. Okay. Wow, that's really good, Joe. Thank you for pointing that out. I have, I guess, one other song.
Yeah.
On this album, I love Mary's Song.
Oh, I just discovered that one like 2 years ago. It's really good.
It's really good. I remember I could only listen to this song on YouTube until like a bit ago, or like when I was growing up, I had to go to YouTube, and then I had to do YouTube to MP3 to try and convert it to like a track. Like,
was it not available on streaming?
No, it wasn't. And I'm like, I think I had to rip all my early Taylor music. Sorry, please LimeWire people don't, you know, come after me. Anyways, it's a song about, you know, small town people falling in love, being together forever. And I do really love the idea of being with my high school sweetheart. I didn't really have a high school sweetheart, but I thought that would be a lovely journey for myself growing up. And I was like, oh, you know, I'll just like marry this person that I met in high school, and they'll be like really wonderful, and we'll just always live in this like small Orange County town. That wasn't my reality, and I've since had to grieve that dream. But I do like this song for those reasons.
Well, it's funny you say that, because like high school love, I'm just kind of like roll my eyes. But a reason I really like this song too is that they were lovers in high school, but they were also childhood friends, which for some reason that sounds so sweet. And like, I love the idea of like two family friends having kids that get married, because like, you love your in-laws, both families love each other, and like, I wish that would be my future, but no, I already know there's no family friends I can or want to marry.
Hey, just so you know, if you're a Peacock family friend, like, there's nobody that Joe's interested in, like, count it out, it's not happening.
Yeah, and that was at a specific two people, so thank you, Jan.
Right, oh, wow, okay, good. Okay, let's talk about the songs we can leave together, leave behind.
So I will preface this with, I really came to be a major Taylor Swift stan later in her album discography. Mm-hmm. So I have not listened to the entirety of this album. And I say that because I think there are songs on this album that if I haven't heard yet, I don't think God meant for me to hear. And I mean that as a little bit of shade, because there are some songs on here where I've started to play and be like, I don't hear it yet. One that I could do without is Tied Together with a Smile. I've never heard of it, but the imagery alone, I don't like that. Like, it makes me sound like she's happy to be tied up, or like, it's gross.
Right. absolutely. I forget that song exists all the time. And I think there are the hits from early Taylor, and then there's all the other stuff that she just had to basically write just to get her name out there, just to, you know, get her foot in the door. And I think, yeah, so that's definitely one of them. There's also this song called Invisible that I think it's extremely forgettable. Like, I think there are the hits, and then there's, you know, everything else from the...
What is Invisible about? Is it about her being invisible to a guy she likes?
It's about her feeling invisible in general, and every facet of her life. And I'm kind of like, okay, yeah, so did every other teen, you know. It just, you know, Taylor has, I think also some of her lyrics in this album are very juvenile, but they still really hit. And then I think with some of these other songs, like, they're just juvenile and they just feel like very vanilla.
Right. Right.
And they don't really like hit you in the same way. And I think her lyrics honestly got so much better throughout her albums. Like, especially after Fearless, I feel like starting with Speak Now and then Red, like, her storytelling was like out of control. And I think she had more life experiences, but like, this album, I think, is Taylor Swift and maybe a little bit of Fearless, is just filled with like tropes.
Yeah. And you know, it makes sense. I think she's like 15 when she wrote this album, 16 when it's released, but definitely. Yeah. And I think I'm Only Me When I'm With You is another example of that, but Invisible, like, that, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm Only Me When I'm With You, it's like, we can just read the sentence. We don't really need the whole song. We get the point.
100%. And Invisible, it's like, yeah, we saw Mia Thermopolis. Like, I just get very Mia Thermopolis. Yes. Somebody sat on me again vibes in that.
Literally. Somebody sat on me again. Oh, it's such a good movie. Okay, let's move on to Fearless.
Okay, Fearless. So Taylor Swift won the Grammy for this album and several Grammys that year, which I don't know if she was the youngest person to ever win Grammy of the year, but I mean, she was like 18 when that happened, which is just
this
wild.
Is like, and when she's getting up there and thanking people for her Grammy, she's like full twang. I'm just a country girl, you know, like, it's crazy to watch.
And we can't say just like how big this album was. And I mean, it had smashes like Love Story and You Belong With Me, which I personally prefer the former. I Love Story so holds up to me. It's so I think there's just like both hope and fear of this being taken away. And you hear all of that, which I think is just like perfect in a pop song.
It's a gorgeous song. You hear the opening notes and you instantly love it. I think You Belong With Me was overplayed. Like, I think You Belong With Me so much. And I think the music video is stupid. I agree. The music video. I hate like this girl with glasses trope. It didn't hit me. I think Love Story is one of the most amazing songs off of Fearless. I also
Chant, for your listeners, we should say, when we're talking about the Fearless album, we're talking about the album that was re-released this year, Taylor's version. We're not talking about stolen version released circa 2008.
Everyone should realize that the albums we're talking about are Taylor's version. And so when we speak about Red, we do realize that Taylor's version has not come out yet, and so, you know, we do that begrudgingly.
Sure
You know. Okay, so I will say that the music video for Love Story is also stunning. It's in that castle. Do you remember that at all?
Yes, and I'm pretty sure her hair is like 6 feet high in it. And it's
truly medieval. But she's wearing this like beautiful dress. My old roommate, her sister, had a dress made in China, I think, that was the exact replica of Taylor Swift's Love Story dress.
Oh my gosh. She did. Oh my gosh.
Yes, she did.
Too much.
Which is really something and kind of amazing. But the love interest in Love Story music video was really hot. He also dated Miley Cyrus. I don't know. This is like all of my weird like just pop culture knowledge from being a teen. But he was like a little bit older and he was really sexy. He dated Miley Cyrus for like a hot second. And then the love interest in You Belong With Me, Lucas Till, I want to say.
That sounds
he
familiar.
Was on Hannah Montana. I don't know if you remember that at all.
Oh, wow. Well, and Miley Cyrus did a duet to 15 with Taylor Swift that I think was released on music, but they also did it at the Grammys.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So I feel like Fearless is when she wrote that album, she was starting to date some of like the heavy hitters, or at least in my brain, the heavy hitters, which would be Joe Jonas.
And what do you mean when you say heavy hitters? Because my mind doesn't immediately go to famous.
She's starting to date other celebrities. Yeah, in my head, it's like she's starting to date other famous celebrity men, and namely Joe Jonas. So like who to me is the heaviest of all hitters. And she wrote the song Forever and Always about him, which is why it's in my top. I see that it's not in your top. Do you want to?
Yes, it's actually. It is one of the two tracks I would throw away. I think that breakup was really fresh in her mind. And I know it was the last track she wrote for that album because she said so on that iconic Ellen appearance where she explained to all of America that Joe Jonas broke up with her over the phone in like 14 seconds.
Right. Yeah.
That song just like doesn't do it for me. In fact, I will say in preparing to talk with you, I listened to a couple tracks from the Fearless record while walking and I had to take out my headphones after that song just to kind of give myself a breath of fresh air. But I'm glad that it's. What do you like about it? I'm. I mean, Taylor obviously liked that she did an acoustic version of it too.
I think it is. I think there's a large part of this that is just me being obsessed with Joe Jonas. And so loving any type of pop culture nod to him or getting to imagine yes. him, like, or getting details about his life or who he was in a relationship. And I think it also, like, speaks to – this is me really, like, psychoanalyzing Taylor Swift, but I think she really, really, really liked Joe Jonas. I think that he was maybe a guy that she fell super hard for. And then I think to have him break up with her, it just like ripped the rug out from underneath her. And I think from my perspective, I really loved him as well. And I'm like, okay, I can understand why you fell so hard. And I would also feel a similar way if he broke up with me over the phone. And so we connected on this level with this song.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. Okay. I could see why you'd have a different reading of that song than
yeah. I did. I've got my own bias in the situation.
And baggage, apparently. Well, I see from our doc
baggage that you also, and bias.
Yeah, baggage and bias. Your other podcast.
I'm here.
You're so open.
So good. Wait, Joe, are we starting an alternate podcast called Bias and Baggage? I think so.
I feel like you're getting on it too. Very quickly.
Honestly, so quickly. Bias has like another. We were talking about a different kind of bias, but it has a different kind of tone.
Baggage and Bias, the After Hours podcast.
Literally, the After Dark version.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. I see you also like 15, which is yes. a song that I'm surprised I play as often as I do as a 29-year-old man. But it's good. It's just like, and I think it's also
it
just like
lovely.
Good for her for writing it too.
Yes. Yeah. I actually like listening to that song more as an adult. Because I think when I was younger and I was listening, like, I think I maybe was around the age of 15 when the song was out. And I was like, it yeah. kind of was annoying to me. And it was like, ugh, of course, like, people are going to tell me that my love's not real. But now mm-hmm. as an adult, when I listen to it, I'm like, yes, of course, you know, somebody tells you they love you and you're going to believe them. And then you, like, you know, actually have a true I love you moment with somebody who's like, when you are a little bit older and you're like, oh, this is way different. This is way more special and meaningful. And, yeah. you know, you just all the naivete of being a teen, it's a really wonderful time, and I love the way she writes about it. So yeah, I love 15.
I do too. And there's that lyric, but in your life you'll do things greater than dating the boy on the football team, but I didn't know it at 15. Like, it's like, oh, so good.
So true.
Scripture.
It's so true. Yeah. I even scripture, honestly, memorialize it, put it on a stone tablet.
Yes.
I don't know, nail it to a church door. It's important well, also, doctrine, which I'll learn.
It totally is. And like, how many 15-year-old girls have gotten taken advantage of by an older high school boy? And so I just love that she's yes. giving voice to that. It's just, yeah.
Totally. Totally. And just, you know, of like, maybe it feels a little dumb to recount these lyrics, but whatever. And it's like, it's so true. A friend's help can, what is it like? A friend's help can help you get
in
through
this,
anything.
In this song?
Yes, like, hold on, like, before I sing it, hold on.
that sounds like a Mr. Rogers song, like, a friend can help you. Oh, she sings like Abigail, who gave everything to a boy.
Okay, so I actually was thinking, listening to this, thinking, I'm like, are we outing Abigail as, like, losing her virginity at 15?
She
like,
definitely
gave
is.
Everything?
I gave mean, everything she had.
Absolutely, right?
Oh, if yeah, Abigail gave everything she had to a boy who changed his mind, and we both cried. I don't think they're talking about, you know, a weekend.
No, they're yeah. not talking about a makeout. Yeah. No.
Abigail's in the video, too. We love Abigail. She's in Miss Americana, Abigail, which you just watched.
Which I will get to. Well, I'll just say that we'll put a pin in that. Remind me to talk to you about my thoughts on the Abigail Taylor Swift meetup. Yes. Okay, it says, a friend's help – hold on. I found time can heal most anything. I swear there's a line that's a friend's help.
So, Jan, I think you read, like, I don't know, a mental health awareness ad. Because Taylor Swift is an amazing writer. And I don't know if she would say a friend's help. But honestly, let's glaze it on a plate. Let's put it on a mug.
I think I've been listening to the lyric, I found time can heal most anything, and I've been hearing the front
of. I'm crying. Oh my gosh. And what was the lyric that you thought it was? A friend's help could what?
Like a friend's help can heal most anything.
I just so love this. It's so vague as a friend's help. Like, what did this friend do? Like, not chatting with a friend, but a friend's help.
It's literally, it's straight out of Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul.
Well, that explains why you're such a good friend. That's beautiful, though.
Thank you.
Time, okay, well, friendship. Okay. Who's to say?
Who's to say? All wounds. Okay. All right. Well, moving along, I really should have read all these lyrics before doing a complete Taylor Swift discography deep dive, but mistakes were made.
The 27 on the ACT is starting to show. Right. Just kidding. No, I think 27 is a great score. I'd be proud.
No, it was literally, it's 1 point lower than I think BYU's average, or like BYU's, I think. Yeah, so that, like, it didn't make me feel safe. I felt like I was on shaky ground with getting
Well, imagine how I felt applying there with a 24.
Right, right. I can't imagine.
I was like, I got to knock this essay out of the park.
Like, wow, I need to go to Nicaragua, Peru, like all these places to write this essay. Gotta find some story.
Oh my gosh.
So good. I'm dying at a friend's help. Okay. This is what this podcast is. It's a friend's help with Joe Peacock.
Because sometimes a friend's help is all you need.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let's move on to Speak Now.
Speak Now, it's an interesting record.
Yes. Should we talk about this album cover?
Yeah, just like plain.
I have approximately two thoughts on it. It's that one's in red and one's in purple, and I don't know the difference between the two. Right, a different color dress.
Okay, so great question. Your true Taylor Swift fans listening to this will know that she puts out a deluxe edition to each album, or she used to.
Right, okay, yeah.
So that's why, you know, there's a Fearless one, stolen version, with the black background. And then there's the deluxe one has a red dress. And the normal release one is purple. Yeah.
Okay.
But what was your second thought?
No, it was just that there was red and purple. Those are my two thoughts about it. Really nothing crazy.
No. I mean, this album has
a very – she continues with, like, the princess look. And I
she's doing, like, Disneyland cosplay.
Yes, yes. Fearless and Speak Now, very princessy. I need to add that I've seen her in concert for each of these tours. And both of these, I feel very privileged to have seen her. And this on this tour, during Speak Now, I touched her hand.
Oh my gosh.
Shout out to my friend Haley, who was there, and we both touched her arm. And it was like an incredible experience. I haven't been the same since.
Speaking of genuine interest, how did it compare to your expectations? Like, her, how did it feel?
The best. I mean, my mom, I think, went with me to that one, and then my mom continued to just, like, my mom wasn't a big Taylor Swift person, but then after seeing her in concert, like, it's an incredible show. Like, it's so good. And I actually have a few annoyances about her concert, mainly that she does this thing where she walks out on stage and she kind of, like, looks at the audience like she's, like, so shocked that people are filling these arenas. And it's just not – it doesn't work for me. It doesn't, like, make me feel like, oh, she's so humble. It's just like, okay, it's annoying. Like, you know, just soak it up. And I just don't like her, like, oh, what? Like, this – she has this, like, look of, like, wonder and, like, merriment in her eyes. It's just like, I can't believe people still like me as a pop star. And I'm like – bitch, you're worth like $1 billion. Like, just like take the check and put a smile on your face. Don't give me this, like, you know, humble BS.
That's funny because she does do it at every show, no matter how big or small. And she does pause for an abnormally long time soaking it in. But it for some reason works for me. I believe it. I'm like, I just think she's just surprised. I mean, if you look at those YouTube videos of shows she used to do where it's like in front of bleachers and to the side of a barbecue.
You know, you're right. And I'm sure she is astounded. But I'm like, you know, after you do like a 50-city tour, like, are you really that astounded every time? And when your tickets sell out and you know, like in 30 seconds, are you really that like, what? I can't believe this. I don't know. I'm not buying it. This is where like cringe Taylor Swift comes in.
It's true. I mean, there's, yeah. And then, now this album, we should say, she wrote each of the songs on the album, which I think is the first time she did that for every song on the album. And it was to prove a point too, because I think there were rumors that like, oh, she always has a co-writer. So is it really her writing these songs? And obviously now we know that she's an amazing songwriter, but there were questions of that before. Yeah. But also Chan, you know,
go ahead.
Oh, this album, like, it doesn't have a certified real like standout breakout hit. I'm sure some of these songs were number one for a few weeks or whatnot, and maybe someone will correct me on that, but like compared to her other albums, who, you know, Fearless had Love Story, You Belong With Me, Taylor Swift Tim McGraw, this one has what, Mine?
Right. Like, right,
yeah.
Okay, so here are my thoughts about Speak Now as an album, because I did get a song confused in this, and I'm going to come clean with the audience. I did write that All Too Well was my favorite song off of this. And then let's just read the kind words that you wrote. You said, Chan, this song is on Red. Do not embarrass yourself. You will leave crawling, Lamau.
Laugh my ass off. I think, you know, I imagine you're going to have some real hard Taylor Swift fans listening to this. And All Too Well is just like the pinnacle, the fountain of youth.
Right.
It's the book of Isaiah. And
it is so cornerstone of our Taylor Swift religion.
Yeah. To think that Miss Taylor could have known what she knew when she wrote All Too Well during the Speak Now era is a laugh. But
right. It's a total laugh. And I'm sorry for that grave mistake. I got lost in this Google Doc.
Well, Chan, I think my response, what we didn't tell the listeners, is that you wrote All Too Well was your favorite a song off Speak Now, and you wrote All Too Well in parentheses, duh.
Right. Of course. No. Duh. This is the easiest thing I've ever done.
I would say, just get this album well and blank space.
Okay. Well, Speak Now, I think I forget about this album because here's the thing. I don't feel like I return to these songs very often.
No.
And I don't know if Speak Now is maybe my least favorite album.
But it is mine.
It also has some bangers on it. Like, and the reason why I love these bangers is because she talks about her. She's got a song here about John Mayer. She's got a song in here about Taylor Lautner. She's got a song in here about Camilla, whatever Joe Jonas is, fling that he moved on to after her.
One is about Lautner?
Back to December allegedly about Taylor Lautner. So that one is amazing. Dear John, I mean, that song guts you. It Dear John is really, really good. So I would say that Dear John is probably my favorite off of this one when I have the correct album in front of me. But I really don't return to this album very often because it's – I don't know why. What is it about it for you, Joe?
This song, and I think she would say too, you know, she's like experimenting with a lot. It's a busy sound. So maybe during the re-recording, I'll like it more. But it's also very country in a way that just feels somewhat generic, like songs like Mine and Sparks Fly. But yeah, Dear John and Back to December, I agree. They're great.
They're more stripped down.
And I think it could also be like, I didn't listen to this when I was in high school. So I found it retroactively after I was listening to Red in 1989. Yeah. So. But having said that, Last Kiss, a great slow jam. And I listen to that song.
It's sad.
It's so good. You know, just the idea that like you didn't know that this was going to be your last kiss or that there would be a last kiss.
Right.
I mean, I listened to that like after like people I've had a one night hookup with, like, oh, I didn't know that was going to be our last time. Like, what did I think?
I've been there as well. And you never know when the end. And so you got to cherish every moment and you got to remember that a friend's help can heal most anything.
So true. But one standout from this album is Long Live. Yeah. I think it's the last song on here. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, and she brought it back for the Reputation Stadium Tour. And you can see that in Netflix. I think it's like the hour 40 mark. But she plays a stripped down version on the piano of Long Live and New Year's Day. And Long Live is a beautiful song.
Okay, I have the exact opposite opinion of Long Live.
Oh, in my opinion, do tell.
The song Long Live is a song written for her band members, which I'm like, I don't really care. Write it is? Song, and then, well, it's just like about, well, I don't know.
That makes sense. No, that could make sense.
I think it's like about her band and just like about her journey. I'm sure it's about a lot of things, but I always am like, okay, here's the obligatory song about your band and your backup singers. And I just wish this could have lived in more of like a private setting. She was like, oh, I wrote this song. This is for you guys. I'm not going to put it on the album, but just know it's for you. And, you know, I don't like the metaphors about like crashing through kingdom walls. Like, that doesn't resonate with me. I'm grounded in reality. And so I don't actually like Long Live. So the fact that she brought it back to then play it with Next to New Year's Day, which is one of my favorite Taylor Swift songs, was hard for me.
It was offensive. I mean, to your point, you know, I wrote in her lyrics, she has, "I had the time of my life fighting dragons with you." Mm-hmm. Like, that should not work for me. I don't even, like, I turned off Game of Thrones in the first minute because I saw a dragon and I was like, no, I'm not doing How to Train Your Dragon for Adults. And
no.
But this song really works for me, but I never knew that it was about her and her band. But it completely makes sense.
Read the lyrics, Joe. Like, open your eyes. It says, "The crowds in the stands went wild. We were the kings and the queens, and they read off our names.
The time we stood with our shaking hands."
I mean, this is an obligatory, like, my label says I got to write a song about my band members. They're feeling like, you know, the 50 city tour is really wearing on them. So if you could write them a song, it'd be great.
So funny. So funny. Well, I think I was confused because by verse two, she's like, okay, we did that. And then she goes back to her old tricks and she's like talking about homecoming king and queen, how you traded your baseball cap for a crown, which is hot.
Oh my gosh, we don't
talk enough about baseball players. I think it's because surfers are so hot and basketball players are so loud. But
it's true.
Baseball players are sitting in the dugout. They come out like hot. That's
okay.
Neither here or there, but yeah.
I went to a Yankees and Cubs game about a week ago, and commented on how baseball players don't really have to like stay in crazy good shape, but mm-hmm. maybe that is like kind of hot because like they're not, you know, they kind of had like the dad bods going for them.
I think you're right, and I'm a little bit turned off by a just like, you know, six pack look or whatever. Like, love that they're in shape enough to run around a few pillows around a yard or whatever, like the bases. That's enough.
Pillows in a yard. Totally. Couldn't agree more. I also think that there's something about a man with chewing tobacco that I'm sorry, mom and dad, if you're listening, but I do like that for some reason. I don't know if it's a cowboy thing. I don't know where it comes from, but I've actually never kissed somebody who used chewing tobacco, and I don't think I would like it, but in theory, sometimes I dream.
That's interesting. I mean, I could not be more grossed out by tobacco. There, I sat next to a man on a plane, which, like, is that even legal? But, like, he was spitting out tobacco.
No! Was this 1965?
No, it was, like, circa 2020. Or 2019, because he wasn't wearing a mask. But to your point, like, seeing a man, like, kind of chew something is, like, that motion they're making while they're chewing tobacco is hot. But, like, I kind of wish it was just
it's masculine.
Yeah, it is. I wish it was more like a wheat tear or something than tobacco.
Sure. Like a Werther's.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Okay, wait. What songs can we leave behind on Speak Now?
I listened to it today and I would say Better Than Revenge and Haunted. I just think, you know, for someone who leaves so much gold on the cutting room floor, like when she re-released Fearless, she had all these songs. I'm like, what? These could be and have been hits for other people. I don't know how those songs made it on Speak Now. And also, I will say, I've listened to like half of it. But yeah, no.
No. I never really listened to Haunted. I don't think that I could like recall like a melody or anything from it. So I totally agree. I don't know Innocent at all. There's like these one word album or song titles that are extremely vanilla, and like you could tell me that Martina McBride wrote a song called Innocent and Haunted and it was on an album, and I'd be like, yep, sounds great, totally, because they're just not memorable. No
that
shade to any of our
so
Martina McBride stands.
My mother
I
Chan, real quick story. Yeah. I lived in a house that shared a fence with our elementary school.
Okay.
And so
darling,
it's cute, but yeah, I was at my school in the fourth grade, and over the intercom I was reported to the office, and they're like, hey, your mom wants you to come home. I thought someone had died. I walked home.
Scary.
And she I walked into the house and I was like, what happened? She's like, I am doing a musical performance at our church activity tonight, and I cannot find the Martina McBride album. I need to practice it.
Stop!
I need you to find it. Yes. So
kidding.
I get on my knees and I'm looking through our drawer of CDs and I find her Evolution by Martina McBride. And I go back to school.
Oh my gosh. I am picturing your mother in shambles, and this is the most sweet, tender moment when you find this darling album. Oh my
gosh. Like, the woman could not have opened that drawer, but yeah.
No. Oh, my gosh. I just love, like, the flurry of just, like, well, let's pull him out of school. Pull him out of school. Call the school. Send him on home ASAP. You know, get a move on it. They just can't wait.
100%. So, and it's good. Not like I was the only, you know, kid at that school of hers. Right, she had three other people she could have called.
I also want to know, was your parents were Mormon, right? So they were singing, was she singing a Martina McBride song at like a family night or like a devotional?
I'm glad you asked. My dad was turning 40 and she had reserved the church gym to throw a surprise birthday party, but she had in doing so, she had turned it into a ward congregation potluck and invited the whole congregation and assigned people to bring food. And she was singing My Valentine by Martina McBride. To your point, a real vanilla song. And she had our ward pianist play the number for her.
I love how your mom was just deploying people in the ward to make this party happen.
I know. Like, I would like
you're to see receipts. You're on potluck.
Exactly. And I just wonder, like, I hope she didn't dip into church funds for that. My dad's 40th, but okay.
Right. Who's to say?
Who's to say? You know, it's not me.
All water under the bridge.
Well, yeah. Also at the same party, she had my five sisters and I dance to a choreographed song for my dad. Because our family song, for whatever reason, was No One Else on Earth by Wynonna Judd.
My gosh.
So we did like a rodeo style dance to that. But everyone was mad. All my sisters were mad at me because I was like, I don't even know what the words are. I was like out of rhythm or like I was not in sync.
Right. Is there footage of this that you could unearth?
There is. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Okay, good. I think the listeners are going to want it. So yeah, if you could send that my way.
We'll put that behind your paywall.
Perfect. That'll be on the Patreon, folks. Okay, $7.99 a month. Thank you. Leave us a 5-star review. Oh my gosh, Joe, that is a wonderful story. And now I have a new love for Martina McBride because of your family. Sure. So thank you.
All right, y'all. That was part one of our amazing episode with Joe Peacock, the one and only. If you want to hear part two, listen on Patreon. We will be going through Red, Reputation, 1989, Folklore, and Evermore. So stay tuned. Listen in and buckle in, baby. Bye.
That's all for now, folks. Don't forget, give us a 5-star review, hit us up on Instagram at PopApologists, and we will see you next week, live every Wednesday.